Whenever feasible, one should always try to eat the root. Would you join me at the table?
Welcome to Eat the Rootcast, a podcast about NBC's Hannibal and the works of Thomas Harris. I'm Cooper, and I have with me...
Hi, it's Miko.
And this is Ophelia.
And tonight we are drinking Vina Fuerte, Tempranillo.
Wow.
Did you like that? Fuerte.
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 Wow, that was almost continental.
Almost.
Almost.
But there's the accent over the N, so it's Vina.
It's Vina.
Vina Fuerte.
Yeah, if there's an ñ,
it's
Vina. Vina Fuerte.
I imagine it's from
vine.
From España.
Strong vine, I think, actually. Because vino is wine. Vina, I think, is the vine.
Well, we were drinking that and talking about Season 2, Episode 11. So you pronounce it because I don't have confidence.
It's Conomino.
Conomino. So the O with the line over it, that's a long O.
Yes.
Gotcha.
You get a little extra time.
You ease it into
lingers.
It.
Yes. Yes, it lingers. Yeah. And mono is a familiar ending to anything, because you said it was pickled.
It's seasonal pickled vegetables.
Vegetables, yeah. Usually a skimono is like a general term for pickled vegetables, but they will often also have their own names for what they are, and they usually end in the mono.
This episode is directed by David Slade, who is one of our best directors on this show. He's given us a lot of really great stuff. He is the director of the finale, which is coming up too.
Yeah.
Written by Jeff Vlaming and Andy Black and Brian Fuller. I can never remember. So if
excited.
It's an ampersand, does that mean these two wrote it together and then Brian Fuller came in with the and credit?
That's interesting. Is that...
It's a specific thing I know in screenwriting, but I can never remember which is which. The ampersand means one of them. The word and means the other one. So they wrote it together, and then I imagine... The and means Brian Fuller came in afterwards and polished the script. So the ampersand means that they wrote it together.
That's what I'm thinking. I don't know for sure. That's not the part of this industry
right.
that I'm familiar with. But that seems to make sense to me.
Yeah.
That having an ampersand would kind of glue two people together. And especially since it's sort of and Brian Fuller.
And usually he just comes in and polishes the scripts regardless.
Yeah.
So we start with something that seemed, to me, solidifies the Wendigo and Raven Stag.
Yes.
Because, to me, this the opening seems like the Wendigo is stalking the dying Raven Stag.
Mm-hmm.
And the Raven Stag is birthing Will.
It's visually just breathtaking. You see the Raven Stag stumbles and falls. And then you see the sort of, you know, the coming through the Raven Stag in sort of a womb, like, you know,
viscera
a sack.
Opening,
yeah.
a sack open, exactly.
And then Will has those antlers too.
Yeah.
So it's also the idea of the Raven Stag birthing
and he's
the
black.
Wendigo version of Will. Yeah.
Yes.
He's covered in black goop.
It's his becoming.
It is his becoming.
I wasn't sure if it looked like a birth with the viscera, but it looks like the Raven Stag just falls dead.
It looks like the Raven Stag just falls down, yes.
And that Will just sort of rips out.
Well, I'm looking at the birth the same way we looked at the births from the horses earlier in the season.
Okay.
You know, those were not actual births,
but
those were entombing and then becoming. So that it totally works that... Will is emerging from the chrysalis of the Raven Stag also.
And also maybe perhaps it's saying that in his becoming, he loses his connection to the Raven Stag.
Yeah.
In a way. Or the connection that he had before in which the Raven Stag was more like a familiar that was, that was with him, sometimes guiding him, sometimes just being a,
hey, look over here.
Exactly. Or a signal of something to come, some sort of, you know, signal or, foretelling of something. But perhaps in his, in his becoming, that it needs to be the end of the Raven Stag's part of his life as he becomes, and not, you know, it's not necessarily indicative of what exactly is happening and what's going on, but, it definitely seems to be part of his imagery that's yeah. going on in his dreams and his nightmares or whatever it is.
Well, I also think it, since we follow this with confirmation that Will killed Freddie Louds.
Mm.
I mean, the episode contradicts that later.
Yes.
But, that was up in the air at the end of the last episode. We didn't know. So, with this scene, and then quickly followed by the dead Freddie Louds, yeah. it sort of implies to me that Will sees himself becoming the Wendigo and is not happy with it.
Oh, most definitely.
And that's what the screaming is yeah, about.
It is not a birth that seems, I don't know what the word is that I want to use. It's not willing. It's no. not, it's not something that he is enjoying or looking forward to. It's more of a terrifying realization of what
yeah.
he is being birthed into. And that frightening thought maybe too of becoming too much like, too much like Hannibal.
Yeah.
And that it is a slope he cannot stop himself from, going down into.
I like the visual of the bloody snow mm-hmm. underneath the Raven Stag when it falls. There's a lot of like sharp blacks and just little bits of that grayish white snow, and then you can see that there's the darkened blood that's been like, I guess, probably the product of the birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or like a water breaking kind of.
Placenta.
Moment where things just rush out. Which,
remind me, wasn't it the Wendigo eating the dying Raven Stag in the first yes. episode of season yes. two?
Mm-hmm. It was like, yes. it looked like it was like ripping out the jugular of mm-hmm. the Raven Stag. Yeah.
Yeah. This does definitely seem to be sort of continuing that visual image, yeah. even though they don't give you a whole lot before the yeah. Raven Stag falls.
Did
basically, it's a big, like,
you don't know,
throwing the image up there. We see the Wendigo from behind.
Mm-hmm.
The Raven Stag is standing
observing.
For seconds and then falls.
Mm-hmm.
And it stumbles almost.
Yeah, and there's nothing leading up to that to give us any indication that there was a long pursuit or how he came up to the Raven Stag. It's just, here we are,
right.
and here's the birth. And the whole time, the frightening, glowing red eyes of the Wendigo are back and is just observing.
Oh, yeah, he's just watching.
Yeah. They looked silver this time.
They're silver.
Oh, they're silver.
Oh, okay.
They've always been silver. Mm.
There was something just sort of glowy, and
mm-hmm.
I'm also, I'm looking at it from an angle, so sometimes I don't, and I don't get...
And it's so dark.
Yeah, it's so dark.
So then we have Goldberg variations, mm-hmm. which is always nice to hear in episode, while we have the preparation of the bunting,
the
songbird that is drowned in alcohol
yes.
and yeah, set on roasted. Fire. Yeah.
And consumed whole
and consumed
in one
whole.
Bite.
Bones and all.
Bones and all.
I really like the idea that this is such an offensive dish that people would traditionally wear shrouds over their heads
yes,
to hide
their
God.
Face from God.
But Hannibal does not
Hannibal hide
from
whole.
God. No.
Not at all.
I can't even begin to imagine... No, I couldn't do this.
This is the dish you opt out?
This is where I draw the line.
Ophelia Tesla is opting out.
I would eat the flesh.
Of the bird, yeah.
But I wouldn't put the whole thing in my mouth. Absolutely
I couldn't
nope.
do it either.
Nope.
Yeah. Nope.
What about the, let's take it to the real world where these are tiny marzipan, fake birds that you just pop a little marzipan bird in your mouth with
That's not the same, though.
I know, I'm just saying. That's what they are in the show.
Oh,
that's what
in the
eating.
Show they're eating
They're eating tiny marzipan birds.
Are you unlike, sure?
Don't take are us out of the sure? reality.
Unlike
of the
most
show?
Of the dishes know. On this show, where they are eating actually something are very similar to
because
the.
From what we've seen in the extras, I don't know about.
No, the I'm 100% sure they specifically talked about building these marzipan birds right. for
rather
them to
than
eat.
Making. Because it's true, pretty much everything it. Here. I wonder if it's in. Janice's.
I am sure
website.
She talks about this.
Yeah,
now.
I should look that up because she'll put down like how they designed it and everything.
Ugh,
and how about the sensual close-ups?
Oh my God, it was a porno money shot.
I know. Yeah. I think I wrote that
in
down in here somewhere.
And the extremely shallow depth of field.
Okay.
So they show us just the.
Normally, it takes me a very long time to write down what I'm hearing them say and what I'm visually taking in.
Mm-hmm.
There was a whole point where I was just done writing, just watching
mesmerized.
Them. I had already written down everything describing the close-up of their mouths, and it's still going on when I look up.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like,
and it was their
wow,
their
this
sort
is
of,
a long scene.
You know, the facial expressions of, you know, the different sort of ways they're enjoying the meal and
but it's a close-up of mouths first,
yes.
Like nose down to chin. That's it. And then it would pan
when
up to the face.
We have that very strange shot of Will that makes his whole face look distorted.
Yes.
Because the depth of field is so shallow that you only see his eye in focus. Mm-hmm. And the rest of his face is so out of focus that it actually looks manipulated mm-hmm. and distorted, which was really interesting.
There was a moment I thought they were going to do the overlay of Hannibal's face like they had done before.
Yeah. Yes.
But then I realized they weren't going there, but I noticed that there was this moment where he seems to go out of focus and is somewhat distorted.
Mm-hmm.
They keep going back and forth to the two of them and showing them in tight close-ups and very, acute angles up into their face. And it seems to be all about capturing a central moment.
Well, it is. It's this incredibly metaphorical meal
mm-hmm.
That Hannibal says is a stimulating reminder of our power over life and death.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just we're eating something beautiful. It's that we're drowning it specifically, humanely killing. You know, there's that discussion about humanely killing pigs again
mm-hmm.
and
right.
how pigs should be happy.
Yeah.
And Mason's like, if we were worried about pigs being happy, we wouldn't eat them.
Eat them, exactly. We're truly concerned with the pig's happiness. And that does seem to come up in here a couple of times.
But he's not really concerned, I don't think, with the animal necessarily. He's concerned with how
Mason?
It tastes. No, not
Hannibal.
Hannibal.
Hannibal. Hannibal's like, I could care less, but... I want the meat to taste good, so I want them to be happy before
yes.
they die, and unknowing, and not scared, so they don't get that acidity that he talks about with the Freddy Lowndes meat. Which...
Well, Hannibal is happy that his desires and the animal's desires line up in that
right?
case.
In that exactly.
Because the animals want to be happy, he wants to be happy,
right.
and just
and
there's that,
happy.
That weird intersection
eating.
With the murder.
With the people.
Yeah.
With the eating people.
And maybe the whole thing with, you know, the sort of, you know, the ecstasy of eating this meal is echoed in asking, that when he says that Will was euphoric when he killed Freddy Lowndes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So maybe there's also not only, because everything lately has been about the subtext of Will and Hannibal, like you said, it was very porny and it's like,
oh yeah
yes
and, but also
now you see why there are fleets of tumblers devoted to
the one episode where they're talking about love
yeah.
and killing
no,
them.
I know.
Oh, please yeah no they made this way too easy
yeah but it was I mean there is a lot in their dialogue you know after the first you know it was Hannibal says you know I was euphoric.
Yeah.
And then Will was like, oh, I was euphoric when I killed Freddy Lowndes.
Yeah.
So,
and then they go into that interesting conversation about, did your heart race? And this comes up. It's another book thing.
Yeah.
That,
the slow heart rate.
The slow heart rate. Mm-hmm. And it's come up with, you know, like, a couple of, maybe one or two times in here where they talked about the heart never changing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it happened with Gideon.
Yeah,
it did. When he attacked the nurse, that not once did his heart rate change in the monitor, and that's how come they didn't know anything was going on. And then to have this whole conversation about how, you know, the fact that your heart rate stays consistent and never rises while you're doing this,
yeah,
is indicative of who he is becoming.
And the capacity for cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk, too, about the songbird representation. A lot of times in crime or with the mob,
mm-hmm,
when you say you have a songbird, it means you have a snitch.
A snitch, yeah.
And we've got a dead Freddie Lowndes,
oh,
and
yeah,
a dead songbird on fire. And then we have the
okay, how did I miss
body
that?
Of Freddie Lowndes.
Seriously.
I don't know.
Brilliant.
I was waiting for you guys. I was waiting because you guys are all about imagery and the picture. And
okay.
I'm like,
well,
my all right,
God,
I'm going to throw
it
in.
It is perhaps
there.
The most obviously it, metaphorical.
I'm like, well, before we get over the songbird and we move on to the next topic, I would like to point this out.
Well, okay. Well done. Well,
yes.
Totally missed it, the both of us.
I don't know. I had more to talk about, like, where the hell did they get the body and all that. And not
well,
fool.
Let's get there.
Yeah, we'll
the
get
killer.
There.
Let's
okay. get we'll get there. There. We got
all right. Anyway, songbird on fire.
Well, and then we get the songbird on fire in the wheelchair coming down the
brilliant
thing.
Brilliant.
Okay, so, when I saw the end of last episode the first time, that was the leap I was unwilling to make. That Will Graham killed Freddie Lowndes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy it. I didn't like it. I was not willing to take that leap with the show.
When you asked me, that's why I wasn't ready to go there either.
Yeah.
Mostly because I feel like I can't trust anything.
Sure.
That they're telling me here.
Right.
So I'm willing to believe that nobody other than who I have really seen die, like, obviously,
oh, yeah,
on camera, there is no, but then again, there is movie magic. So, I mean, if we can create TV shows where people, like, wake up and they're in the shower and they realize that an entire season of a show
well, let's
never
not,
existed.
Let's not do that, though. Let's not have Dallas be our barometer to judge the willingness of an audience to go along with things.
It's not the willingness of the audience to go with things. It is the willingness.
The audacity of the creators
to actually think that they could serve that to us.
I would like
and it would
to
be okay.
Challenge.
Uh-oh.
And I would like to, I don't think there's a single thing this show can do right now that would get either of you to stop watching it.
No, I was.
Oh, no.
You yeah remember, I was so upset with the idea that Will
yeah
killed Freddy.
You were upset, but
and
we didn't stop watching.
No, because in the next episode, when it's confirmed that Will killed Freddy, it's also confirmed that Will didn't kill Freddy.
Right.
So if they had dragged that out, I would have had serious issues with the show.
Really?
And I don't know that I would have continued.
I must
with
have
all
less of a
with
conscience
all
than
of it,
you
yeah
do, because it didn't
I was, no, I was really upset because that is a severe misunderstanding of the character.
Mm.
But they're not
severe
doing the
no
character.
It doesn't matter. Will Graham is still a character.
But
Will Graham
he's
is
not
a,
this mentally disturbed.
No,
the
I know,
he's
I know,
not,
but that Will
Aloha
Graham, the Will Graham that kills Freddie Lowndes,
mm-hmm,
is not a Will Graham who can chase down the Tooth Fairy in Red Dragon. And if that happened, that would be a problem in Brian Fuller's understanding of the character that I wouldn't be willing to go along with.
All right.
The good news is I didn't have to go along
yeah
with it, because Freddie Lowndes is still alive.
I think this
I know
is
Miko
the
doesn't really feel that that's good news.
I feel like right now this is a how many licks will it take to get the to the center of the Tootsie Roll Pop? We will never
the world
know.
World
the world
well,
will
okay, then
never
let's
know
instead discuss, do we think the lab techs are in on this too?
Oh, absolutely
yeah
they're in on this cover-up, because they lead. Like, that whole scene was scripted for Hannibal to be in that room.
Yeah.
They
the dental
it
records.
The, yeah. I honestly don't think that, what's his name? It's,
Price and Zeller?
Price Zeller. And Zeller. I don't think Zeller's that witty. He never comes to those. I mean, sometimes he has a zinger. But in
the
this,
little bit of kerosene, voom, inflammatory journalism.
I don't know. I'm just like,
he
I
sat
didn't
up
buy
the,
it.
Like the night before.
Like thinking about it, thinking about it. I gotta come up
with something
good.
Jack said, come up with something.
Price has them all the time. I gotta have something good for tomorrow morning.
I gotta one up him tomorrow. He always wins.
Maybe.
On
maybe he was
but
thinking
Price
about that
beat
all
him
night.
With the, he beat Jesus by 48.
Yeah.
Or so. It's like, so yeah. if they're doing tick marks on a chalkboard somewhere for these
Price
things,
is still
Price
winning.
Is still in the,
Price is still
in the lead. But I think having the body in the lab and only falsifying the records they were giving or the results
the
they
records.
Were given,
yeah.
I don't know if that could have been easily done. I think it's possible in movie world.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't Hannibal
To have done that.
Why and would then, Hannibal know?
At some point in the show, Price and Seller go, oh, man, you had us.
Well, but it is possible Jack was able to put together. I mean, even if you put up slides that say, you know, Freddie Lounge, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Freddy Lounge's teeth. Hannibal doesn't know what Freddy Lounge's teeth
look
like.
Yeah, not the teeth. I meant about, you know, how, first of all, how the meat was cut off with the hunting knife.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, the person being dead before being immolated.
Yeah.
Just a lot of things that I think.
Well, that all fits with the story.
I'm saying there's ways for them to try to recreate this murder where they would have messed it up and Hannibal would know. He smelled gunpowder on her hand, for Christ's sake.
Well, yeah.
He can smell cancer through your body. If we're
the nice
Hannibal,
thing about
Hannibal's
fire
gonna know that
is it really, really, really eliminates almost everything except dental records. Which, you know, it's totally a, this is why we did this. And the really funny thing is the trailers for this episode showed the wheelchair on fire.
Oh.
So, as an avid viewer of Hannibal Lecter movies, I've seen the wheelchair on fire twice. In Red Dragon and Manhunter. Both times didn't go so well for Freddie Lounge.
No.
Yeah. Well, okay. I don't know. I feel like there was
I thought the same thing too when the wheelchair came down, and I was like, wow, okay, we've gone back to really pulling from the books again. Because they're pulling big, huge, gigantic chunks out of books. We're mixing little bits and pieces of it that they were grinding up and
sprinkling on, like seasoning.
Exactly. It's the Mrs. Dash version of Thomas Harris's work. Now,
this is not the Mrs. Dash version of Thomas Harris's work.
It's little bits and pieces.
This is actually better than Thomas Harris's work. I feel firmly, without question, that this series has improved
on
a really good book.
But I'm just saying in terms of taking bits and pieces
of
other things and putting it in a shaker and just putting a little tiny bit on there. You know,
it's Mrs. Dash.
It's me, I was meaning in quality, because really, Mrs. Dash is really only for people who can't eat salty foods and have to, this is the next best thing. It's not the tastiest thing in the world, but you put enough of it in there, and it makes something taste a little bit more flavorful.
CSI is
garlic is for. Anyway.
Freddie Lounge had to burn. She was fuel. Fire destroys and it creates. It's mythical. She won't rise from the ashes, but her killer will.
Which is directly from the table conversation they had while eating said Songbird on Fire.
It's sort of funny. They make this exact same point. They make this exact same point a few times.
Yes.
The destroys and creates, because that's also the Shiva discussion.
Yes. Is it Shiva or Shiva?
It's Shiva.
Shiva.
Shiva is what you sit when someone passes away
in Jewish
tradition.
And Mrs. Shiva from Little Shop of Horrors.
That's right. But Shiva.
So that we get another moment of Jack's, I see that there is subtext to everything you two are saying right now.
I love now when he does that. Because there's almost like a verbal sparring
going
on.
But see, now we know that afterwards Jack is like, what the hell were you talking about?
Maybe now because he knows more of what, you realize he knows more about what's going on. It's more of a, wow, really, that's what you got out of that?
That's what you guys are saying?
That's where you're going with that?
I like that Will is tormented by this burning body. He's sleeping, dreaming of the body.
Which is why I'm like...
And that screaming, burning body coming was like really... There's something really disturbing to me about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because you can almost see... I know...
I would much rather freeze to death.
It looked like its mouth opened.
Yeah. If you could pick fire or freezing, I would pick freezing every time.
Well, but this person was dead. Beforehand.
I know.
Even still, not Freddie Lowndes, this person was dead.
What she's talking about is the imagery of a live person being immolated, screaming. Yeah. That's what Will was dreaming.
In that moment, it's the idea that the body is alive and on fire.
And that he's sweating and he's tossing and he's turning and he's upset. Mm-hmm. He's imagining being stripped. That's what I extrapolate from that scene, was that he's imagining himself in the position of the person in the wheelchair being lit on fire. And that's what's tormenting him in his dream, in his nightmare. Yeah.
And then Alana comes to torment him in person.
Yes. With applesauce.
With applesauce, yes. We get applesauce. I loved, applesauce is waiting on the porch. The door opens and applesauce takes off,
and
leading
the
pack
dogs.
It's of dogs.
With applesauce.
It's a doggy play date.
Yay!
Okay, let's go.
At least the dogs get along still.
At least.
Not Alana.
There's no judgment.
But at least
dogs,
the dogs get along. Yes. And Alana's there to convince herself that Will didn't kill Freddie Lowndes. I think Catherine Deverness is wonderful in this episode. And she's given a lot of subtlety to play. And she's actually given something to do that she hasn't really had for most of the season. Well, so
She's had major throwdowns with Jack before, though, that she's played very well. And I think she also plays the realization, the demonized Hannibal in her brain.
Yeah.
She plays that very well.
The evolution of her feelings in this episode are really well done.
Oh, yeah.
And
she's struggling.
Yeah.
And I think because she's so deeply involved in Hannibal, whole idea of, I think there's a little voice in the back of her head that is now going, I think he's right.
Yeah.
Maybe he's right.
And she's like, no,
can't be it. And you know.
Everything you thought about this man who was your friend all these years.
Yeah. Because then, if all of this is true,
what else has
this
he
is going to blow
everything.
Her mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it has been years of someone being a trusted colleague. Yeah. Yeah, and then to have someone who is sort of a mentor, and then to continue into a relationship. And I'm sure it can't be great for someone who's like, wow, I gave myself into a relationship, and he's a killer?
Yeah,
I don't date much.
Right? I throw myself into my work.
Yeah, specifically.
The first guy I'm attracted to is mentally unstable.
Yeah.
And the second guy I decide to go for who's more put together is a serial killer.
I think Alana has a type, is what we're learning.
The more damaged you are, the better. I can't think of anybody more damaged than Hannibal
Lecter. She just can't help it.
Yeah.
It's like,
really? She's going to be like dating the Tooth Fairy next season.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
If we get to meet Jame Gum, she'll be dating.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
She's just going to go through the killers
totally
of the week.
That's totally going to turn her on. Is Jame Gum.
Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me.
God. It gives me chills every time you do that. You were doing that the other, was it Tuesday?
Yeah, the last podcast.
And to hear it disembodied in my headset was even more unnerving. It was one of those things like, okay, I think I need to ask you to stop.
I tried
really
to do it. He says
out.
He sticks his tongue at the roof of his mouth and talks. I can't do it.
I don't even want
don't
to try
you
and do
fuck
it.
Me?
I don't sound like that when I do it. Oh,
it is.
It's terrible.
Well, back to this. I won't say it anymore this episode, at least. I promise
Thank
that.
Thank you.
I I really feel like Will is just really pissed off at Alana at this point.
Oh, you well, know, yes and no.
I don't think, well, he was really hurt before.
Yeah.
Now he's just pissed. So,
well, he's pissed that she's so stupid.
Now he's playing the, you know, no one would believe you if you said I was a killer. Just like no one believed me when I said Hannibal was a killer.
I felt like that, too, was a part he had to play. He has to play into this because he doesn't need Alana going back to Hannibal going, guess what Will just said? So he's going to... Sorry. She's...
I mean, they've done a lot of things that didn't thrill me about her character this season, but I'm glad they never got to that point. Do you know what Will is saying about you, Hannibal?
She did. No, she's already done this.
She has already
done
that.
She has actually already done this. But with less sensitive information that Will could probably give two shits about. But this particular convincing her that he's killed Freddie Lowndes, he does not need doubt to be put into Hannibal's mind for him to start sniffing around.
Yeah. And I think it's
to see whether or not it's true.
It's also he's sort of on an edge here.
Yeah.
Because he has to convince everybody that in some way, shape, or form that not really convinced that he did it, but they need to kind of get the idea that he may be, he needs that seed.
Yeah.
To still be there. Not to prove that he's done it, but he needs that. But when she asks him to basically confess, he can't, not only because he can't say that he did it.
Well, and if he did, she'd immediately go to Jack and say, Will said he killed her.
Exactly.
That would jumpstart the
and
thing much earlier.
And I can't imagine
she'd be tattling.
Also that Will could lie to her in that way.
Oh, okay.
That would then, if he admits that he killed her and he didn't.
Yeah.
I think he doesn't want to say that. He doesn't want to say those words to Alana that he did it. I think also knowing what her emotional reaction would be. Because he knows he didn't do it. The whole time he's having that conversation with her.
Sure.
He knows that. And so he has to protect his deep cover.
Mm-hmm.
He also has to protect all the groundwork that they've been laying out. Because all it takes is one person.
Right.
To just, stick their nose in where they don't belong because they think they see what's going on. And then suddenly something that they've been setting up for a really long time and they're just about to catch the killer is usually messed up by somebody who comes in,
hey,
the girlfriend who thinks that her boyfriend cop is cheating on her and thinks that she's going to catch him with some other chick, but really it's them about to catch like the worst killer in the world and ruins it. I think he's worried about her ruining their work, but I think in some way, saying that he killed her would be awful to him.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
he's sort of dancing around it the way Hannibal dances around.
He is dancing.
Oh,
he's
completely.
Even in his language, is very Hannibal-esque.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes up again with Alana, and it's a kind of a theme in the show a little bit, where people will go, what do you believe happened here?
Yeah.
And the answer is, well, what do you believe?
Right.
I don't. What do you believe? Let's dance around this. I'll answer your question with a question.
Exactly. That happens a lot on Hannibal.
That's a therapist
I will
movie.
That is a therapist. Well, how does it make
It's like, what should I do? What do you think you should do?
Yeah,
that's a total therapist move.
It is a therapist.
Because Will uses it. Alana uses it on Jack.
I feel like it's a little bit of a self-righteous moment, too, because not only can he not bring himself to lie to her,
mm-hmm.
but maybe it's that he was so angry at her.
Yeah.
For thinking he
had the
capacity.
Do you really think
I did that? Well, then you know what? Screw you. You can believe whatever the hell you want.
Right.
I don't care anymore because you've now broken that in our
friendship. He's been so incredibly hurt by her
believing he was capable of doing X, and now she again is coming to believe he did.
But he cares enough to give her a gun.
Yes,
he does.
That was what was interesting, because I wasn't sure if she was going to go ahead and use it on
him. He said, whoever you are afraid of, don't be afraid to use it.
I thought he said whatever.
Whoever.
Or whoever. Okay. Don't be afraid to use it. And I liked at the end where he added, find a range and practice.
And practice. Yeah.
9mm, buy a box.
Mm-hmm.
And this scene sort of continues.
Away. Yeah.
In
closes the door on her. That's the part cemetery. I like too, because she's just standing there with a gun in her hand and he just slams the door.
Yep. I am done with you.
And peace out. You're on your own. I'm not going to save you if you come screaming to me.
Yeah. It's true, they do a little bit more of this verbal parrying about whether or not he's guilty at the cemetery.
Yeah.
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 Oh, because it's common for a killer to revisit the victim after death.
They did it again. They do it again at her posing, the posing of the body. They keep parrying back and forth. Mm. And 3 times this episode they parry.
Yeah.
Before she freaks out and runs to Jack.
3 times.
3 times a charm.
Yeah, exactly. 3 is a magic number.
And Caroline DeVernis's eyes are very blue in that scene. Mm-hmm. Like, extensively blue.
Well, they in this entire episode, they use very little of her traditional patterned outfits.
Mm-hmm.
They use a lot of... you know what? I keep saying, it's a note I have to make for myself, there is a specific name for that blue, and I keep forgetting to look it up.
Azure is the only blue that I
know. Azure is like a blue-green. Mm. This is like, it's like a deep...
it's like a cold blue.
It's a very cold blue. It's not cerulean.
Iceberg blue.
It's something like that. There's sort of a deep blue. It's a paint color. It's like, I know I've chosen it.
Oh, is that the lead
it.
One? Hold on.
The lead one?
Yeah, there's a famous blue paint that contains lead. It's necessary for it to contain lead, for it to get that hue of blue. And it's famous for painters getting lead poisoning because they would stick the brush in their mouth and twirl it while they were using the blue.
Mm-hmm.
And their mouths would, their lips would be purple or blue, and then they'd paint with it. I can't remember.
Well, while you're looking that up.
Okay, you guys continue.
Talks about, he asks, are you profiling me? Dr. Blue? And I'm here because my psychiatrist suggested it'd be therapeutic.
It would be I love the way he says that, too.
Well, yeah, it's this disdain. It's my psychiatrist. You know, your boyfriend.
Your boyfriend.
Hannibal Lecter.
That guy that you keep defending. You know, that guy you chose over me?
Yes.
He thought this would be a good idea. Exactly. I'm not here because you think the killer will return, to see the victim after they're dead.
Right.
And they do. They sort of. It's that whole thing of they both know how this all works. She knows from her work on her end with the FBI and with these investigations, and he knows, and they're sort of dancing around things because they both know too much. It's like, this is how it happens. And that whole thing of, well, you must not be here looking for the killer because you don't seem interested in anybody that's in the crowd. And I thought it was so interesting that she would say that because I was thinking, well, how do you know that the killer would be in the crowd? And then they parry that with him later on being outside of the crowd and her accusing him of being the killer that has returned. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, that's why if he was returning looking for the killer, he wouldn't necessarily be focused on the crowd.
Right.
He could be scanning and looking for people lurking in, behind trees or...
He's right over there. It's Hannibal Lecter.
Right, exactly.
See, he's right there.
He's right there. But they do play around that in a very funny way in this. With their very terse conversation with each other.
So when Freddie returns to the episode, she is a Shiva tableau.
Yes. I didn't think we were going to see a tableau. Killer of the Week-esque tableau until the next season. I didn't think we were going to see another one. So I was excited to see a tableau. I love them.
And here it's interesting because, the FBI is faking this.
Mm-hmm.
This is not Freddie Lowndes.
Yeah.
It is someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then to dig that someone back up again and attach six other arms to it. So six other someones have now gotten desecrated by the FBI.
Did they say it was the FBI? Do we know?
Oh, no. You know what? They specifically imply Hannibal did this.
Yes.
Because this was, this is the courtship.
Yes, this is the courtship. This is not, this, could he have a benefactor?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, this, you know.
Because Shiva is both destroyer and benefactor.
And benefactor. He is both creator and destroyer. You know, Hannibal even says that later, that he's both creator and destroyer.
Yeah.
You know, and as well as in that moment saying that Shiva is both destroyer and benefactor, he is being guided. You know, then there was like, well, maybe his benefactor did this. So there is...
When that's where Alana really nods.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You see it sinking into her face.
Because it, I think it's really the implication that if she actually believes what she believes about Will, it's very likely that what he is saying about Hannibal is true.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting because one of the things I had written here, I made a note about Alana's analysis. And that... I said, Alana's analysis is more like an accusation. So before they have this conversation, the two of them are doing this analysis, and I found it really interesting that that Alana's entire analysis of what's going on is biased.
Right.
It's really
Well, yes, because Freddie Lowndes and Randall Tier are connected. They're connected. Because she was working on that case.
Exactly.
Oh, Freddie Lowndes was working on many cases.
On many cases, exactly. But then she doesn't realize it in the course of the analysis. And then when all this other stuff, there's that realization of, oh, but wait, there's another connection.
Yes. There's one very specific connection.
And that there is a benefactor. And I think there is a moment where everyone is like, okay, you know, there, it seemed like there was a moment where they did their part, which was they faked Freddy's death. Or Freddy in Flames, as I wrote somewhere else. And then I thought that would be a great band name.
Freddy in Flames.
And, but then did they foresee Hannibal's next step?
Right.
Similar to the
Tree Man. I imagine not.
And things like that. That he was going to take else's work and make it into his own work. And that this could possibly be him feeling like he's working in tandem with his new partner. You know, I'm sorry, well, I just did air quotes. Oh,
it,
my God.
It could be him saying, I'm impressed with you.
Right, right. So it's, but again, there is no definite here. Right. We have not, we've only been given an indication that this is, you know, what it is. And for it to have this meaning that it's Shiva, the, you know, the god that is both a creator and destroyer.
Well, and also we have a lot of discussion on pregnancy and childbirth in this. And if we're looking at creator and destroyer, Will is both the creator and destroyer in this.
Well, he lost a child, likely to gain one.
Yeah, gained a child and lost one. Poor Margot goes through a lot in this episode.
And we do have Zeller's great line. Never thought Freddie Lowndes would make it to heaven, much less get deified.
Oh, yes. There was that.
There were some great lines in here. That's a great one. And one of my favorites was the... That beats Jesus by 48 hours.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay, so I've got four that I think might be the right blues. We have ultramarine that came from lapis lazuli, cobalt blue, which came from miners mining cobalt, and then cornflower blue or Egyptian blue. Any of these? These are all toxic.
They're all toxic.
None of those sound...
Cornflower blue is usually
lighter, right?
Similar to that, but lighter.
Yeah.
It's kind of like... But you'd see a lot of country, crafty type stuff, like, clothing. It's usually like a light blue. That's because it's a cornflower, flowers, actually, the blue flowers of the cornflower. Egyptian
blue
is usually lapis. It's a color like lapis, which is a very intense blue.
Yeah.
But it is similar in that color. Cobalt is
Persian blue.
Bright blue. It's usually, it's like a, almost like a jewel tone. This may be lapis. There's a word
There's Maya blue that, or manganese blue.
It's like,
let's not just focus on
you know what's weird is I almost just want to go, like, after the show, I want to go and just pull out one of
Well, don't worry. We're going to have the Art of Hannibal.
Yeah.
Very soon now.
Oh, I can't.
Next month, Art of Hannibal is coming.
I hope they didn't put, I have to look. They pushed it. It was originally going to come out.
It's towards the end of the month.
No, this is, it's a less intense blue is what they're using in this. And it's a blue that in a palette, like, I used a lot of watercolors and things like, and acrylics and oils. And they're in, usually like when you look at a watercolor palette, when it goes into the blues, you have several blues.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I have this weird, distinct memory of this blue, of choosing it, of using it. And I know it has a name. But because I don't use the name often, I can't remember, and it's been years.
Well, we will find it out.
But this particular blue, and again, thoroughly impressed. I can't wait to get this book. I hope they talk a lot about the costumes. If they ever did a talk or an exhibit with the costume designer and the making of this, I would do everything I could to go to this. Because to be this, and I will say it over and over again, to be this specific with a color palette is such a challenge. And they do an amazingly good job
at it.
To be able to have consistency. You know, when you go out there and you look at fashion, blues can vary from
Well, also remember that there is a lot of post-color correction on this.
Ah.
So every blue could be tweaked
That's
to
true.
The exact blue.
Then the fact that they took that time to do it also impresses me.
Oh, yeah. They care a lot.
It's wonderful. Because I love that the color palette is so consistent. And especially because it really says a lot. The fact that Alana is in that blue for a good majority of this episode. You know, whatever it is that they're trying to tell us. Is still wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that she at times is in these, really jagged, prints or very, distinct prints, like the one we noticed that had looked like blood splatter. And then she goes through periods where, and I don't know, it would be interesting also to go back, because I'm seeing these for the first time,
mm-hmm.
To see.
Well, I think after we watch this, you're going to watch both seasons. Just to get it all.
I already want to do a correlation of the translations of all the names and see if they correlate to
what's in the book.
Yeah, and also to the episodes, the way Tyr is a beast.
Oh yeah,
and they used Sienna and Brown in the painter the artist episode, but also to see if it's when Alana, what level of doubt or what camp she's in. Where she is.
Team Hannibal, Team Wolf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is reflected. Because when she came into Jack's office in that blue, in that sort of typical
with that geometric pattern on, it was like, what, squares, I think?
The skirt was like the squares, and she had a plain blue blouse.
Shirt or skirt.
Yeah. I just found that very interesting. She didn't come in one of her typical, really highly patterned. She came in more subdued, and she had that completely plain one color blouse on, which you don't see Alana in a whole lot in this episode.
No.
You see her a lot in plain one color, whether her jacket or the blouse underneath is solid color.
So Alana's feeling pressured to believe something and is feeling paranoid.
Paranoid.
She's talking to Hannibal about this. I like how Hannibal deflects any discussions about Will, essentially, because she says he doesn't seem to be getting any better, and Hannibal says, "Are you questioning my therapy?"
Yeah, I like how he kind of tries to get out of the conversation by going, "Oh, we'll never truly be alone. He'll always be in the room with us."
Yes, ah! Yeah.
I don't know, like that dream Will
like,
had?
Like the Wendigo?
Yeah. The dream where the three of you were in bed together?
Mm-hmm. But Will Will's laying next to Alana, and then he rolls over and there's Hannibal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think also it was sort of a clever sort of deflection. Like, oh, really? We're going to talk about him again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, a kind of thing. But she wasn't willing to... not that she wasn't willing to let it go, but she wanted to, like, explain why she felt that way and why she had to bring it up. And there was a lot of deflection and not wanting to directly answer and then getting defensive about almost like, are you accusing me of something?
At the end of this scene, do you feel like Hannibal has made her out? As in,
I like, think Hannibal has serious doubts about her.
He
at
now
this point.
Knows yeah. that she is no longer on Team Hannibal.
Well, no, I don't think he knows that. I think he knows that she could be dangerous at this point, which means
that side glance he gives when he's kissing.
Well, and it's funny because like, they both do that. They both give that kiss to no, it's all okay.
It's like a meh.
Well, because like Alana kisses him. Specifically, it seems to dissuade his concerns.
Right, like, shush your face, let me kiss you.
Well,
you shush your face, let me kiss you.
After Hannibal smells the gunpowder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he kisses her first, and then says, have you been firing a gun?
Right, but he smells the gunpowder
before that. He kisses her hand.
When he kisses her hand, yeah.
Which is a beautiful shot.
Yeah.
Of the gun flap.
Oh, the gunpowder, going up his nose.
Similar to the teacup.
Breathing it in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then it goes, and then he knows. And then it is interesting, too. He kisses her first and then asks, have you been firing a gun?
I think he's actually, his kiss is looking for more information.
You think so?
Because her behavior
open.
When he goes to kiss her will indicate how she's feeling to him.
Will she pull back a little bit or will she lean in?
So I think that is, and because he doesn't get anything from her, in the kiss, then he asks her about the gun.
Yeah. And her response is very vague. Well, I've been feeling paranoid. Mm-hmm. And I guess trying to imply that I
that
can't trust
Will. Yeah, I might need to kill Will.
Yeah, but I think he knows. Not that she knows or she's not Team Hannibal, but I think he gets an inkling that if she's feeling paranoid, if there is anything revealed, she's going to shoot my ass.
Yeah.
How long is it going to take for her to put all the rest of the pieces together?
Yeah.
It's a limited amount of time left.
Yeah. And then I have to be prepared with her reaction when she finds out. And if she's been practicing with a gun, this is not going to be a, how dare you?
Yeah. It's not going to be a hissy fit. It's going to be, there will be blood.
I'm sorry. I'm still hearing Songbirds on Fire.
Wrapping up Alana's story in this episode is Alana and Jack. Mm-hmm. The most terrifying thing in the world can be a lucid moment.
Yes. Oh, it was so good. Yeah. I love that line.
Yes.
I scribbled it down so fast.
You're lying to each other and they're lying to you.
And no matter what you think you know.
Yeah.
You are going to lose, Jack.
I love that, especially knowing that Jack is going to be on the floor of Hannibal Lecter's pantry with a big hunk of glass in his neck.
If you haven't lost already.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't lost already.
Because the idea is that they're setting up this massive chess move.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, they're playing so many moves ahead, but they may have already lost, because if you're playing moves ahead, that means your opponent is likely also playing moves ahead.
And you know that Hannibal can do that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And often thinks way ahead of everybody else.
But at least Alana is lucid enough to say she has no confidence that she knows Hannibal Lecter anymore.
Right.
And it's not that she thinks he's the killer that Will says he is, but
she's unsure what he's motivating Will to do.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And Hannibal could be just manipulating Will regardless.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He could just be the hand behind the puppet.
Right.
And as far as she knows, he could only be that role and nothing more insidious. But maybe he is. If he's that insidious, maybe he's even more.
Well, she's mired in doubt because she doesn't know she doesn't know the truth about anything.
Right.
But she realizes that her entire reality could be false.
Only feeling that way, but then gets walked into a room
and
to Freddie Lounge, who asks about her funeral.
Yes. How was my funeral?
And so basically right there, she's just been slammed into the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, so,
you thought your life has been a lie. Yep, exactly.
For, like, the last however many months has been going on, all this has been big fat lie in your face.
Exactly. Here she is saying that everybody is lying, and then she realizes what's going on.
And she realizes there's a trap being set, and all the pieces are
that's totally got to mess with her world.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you can see that her in her face, you could see kind of like the crack in her brain through her eyes in that scene.
Also means that she was not trusted enough to be involved with this.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, so, she was sleeping with the enemy.
No, absolutely. Yeah. But
Jack isn't gonna...
But it does indicate a profound distrust on Jack's part.
Yeah.
That she wasn't brought in.
Could also further implicate Hannibal.
Yeah.
That I can't tell you this because he really is the person of interest.
Right.
Well, she went off and she went off on Jack for accusing Hannibal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now she's not sure which one of them is which. And she's fairly certain that
somebody
Hannibal's
is killing
manipulating
somebody.
Will. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely one of them is a murderer.
Yeah.
Which
Without
question.
Except that she... Well, yeah, one of them is a murderer without question. But she's not sure which, because she had to go to Will's house to try to convince herself one way or the other.
If Jack is involved in this stuff, just add those implications, because that means Randall Tears tableau was sanctioned by Jack Crawford. Mm-hmm. That means that the flaming Freddie Lounge body was sanctioned by Jack Crawford.
Yes.
Well, you know, Jack has...
He did say jacking up the, what was it?
He's jacking up the law.
That's what I was about to say. It's like Jack's character has always been the person who will go above and beyond to get what he wants.
Or
he's always
to sacrifice one to save the thousands.
Exactly.
That's right.
So he might be willing to set somebody up.
Jacking
up the law.
I can't believe you said that. I can't. It's too much. It's too much. I laugh every time I think about it. Oh, dear.
Is that like a...
So, let's talk about the other major plot point, plot line in this episode, which is the sordid story of the Verger heir.
Yes.
Oh, good God. This bothered me so much.
I just thought it was interesting that now we start... plucking directly from the book.
From the books.
Yeah.
So Margot's pregnant. Will was invited to the therapy session where we discussed this.
Yes.
Which, I like that reveal. That was cute.
Will's just standing there. And the way he was standing there looked a lot like sometimes in the show when you see somebody there, but they're not actually there.
Right.
And so it's like, so is Margot hallucinating Will there? Or what's going on?
He's thinking of him, and he just happens to be there. Oh, no, he's there.
Catherine Isabel has another wonderful delivery with I Lied.
I Lied.
You said I Lied.
I Lied.
Yeah. And I love the way she turns her face.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, uh-huh. Yeah. Got what I wanted. Sorry.
Sad.
And she's not opposed to a male influence as long as it's not her brother.
He's not good with children.
Indeed. Well, I thought it was interesting that that she said, I always thought that men were an optional, what did she say before that?
Optional to the child-rearing process, or something like that.
I thought it was something about the way that they are donors, sperm donors, essentially.
Yeah.
That's what she was going for.
She kind of goes into that a little bit, that, you know, that they are optional in the process, that you, and it might be
alluding. We need you for your sperm, and that's it.
Exactly. Right. And I think it's sort of pointing back to what she does in the book where they're looking into doing the artificial insemination.
Yes.
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 Where she's jamming a cattle prod up Mason's ass.
To get
the Verger sperm.
Get the Verger sperm. Exactly.
So we transition to an example of Mason not being good with children.
There's a great transition from that line into Mason and poor little Franklin.
Poor little Franklin. He's not going to be able to stay with Mommy and Kitty anymore.
Kitty Cat.
I like
the look on Mason's face when he said, and Kitty Cat.
And Kitty Cat.
It was like, I don't know, there was so much disdain for children yeah. in that
face. And that whole story is pretty, the story that he tells
pretty much from the
is
book,
lifted
yeah.
from Hannibal.
And then there's the, when he asked the child, his name, and when he said it out loud, I was like, hey, this is the second time Franklin has been used as a character. Mm-hmm. We had the Franklin and Tobias story that came before, where Franklin might actually be the name of this child in the book. It just made me think, oh, okay, they've used
this name
Franklin as a victim. Mm. It was just a victim of Hannibal instead of a victim of
Mason. But yeah. Since they've been plucking little bits and pieces, that maybe they took.
Maybe they took the name because they weren't sure at that time if they were going to put this storyline in. But they
I
don't
Franklin
think we have Mason without Franklin,
Tobias though. Wasn't Franklin child. Already an established?
No.
He was an established patient.
He wasn't.
No.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
He was based on Benjamin Raspail.
That's what it was.
Benjamin Raspail.
Different name, yeah. Same character.
And the Franklin came from Benjamin Franklin.
Benjamin Franklin.
And Raspail and Vetero, I think his name was, are two adjacent streets in Paris.
So
that was because they couldn't get Benjamin Raspail, because Benjamin Raspail is a character from Silence.
For all we know, I can't remember if Franklin really is the name of...
Franklin is the name of the child in the book.
We have confirmation.
Mama and Shirley and String Bean.
Huh?
String Bean. Oh no, we got Kitty Cat. Look at that.
There's Kitty Cat.
What is Kitty Cat?
Because when
Cat's
you said
name?
Kitty Cat, I was like, oh my god, that's exactly like
I remember Kitty Cat.
Yeah.
I remembered Kitty Cat.
Because I always thought it was so redundant.
Oh, to say Kitty Cat?
Kitty.
And then after Mason opens his cigarette case full of
Kit Kats.
Tiny
gauze squares.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
And gets Franklin to cry.
Because maybe they didn't
have a chocolate.
Yeah.
Oh God.
And throws it
in the air. He throws it up in the air.
Yeah.
And
like payment for a shoe shine.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Like here's a dime, kid. Go buy yourself something nice.
Yeah. Thank you for the tears, pal. Here's some chocolate.
I don't know if I should. Yeah,
we got that weird Turkish music.
Yeah.
This
crazy.
As he was drinking, really loud and
really
discordant.
Loud.
There,
lots of drums while he makes his. I find that really interesting.
What was the air? There was an air, like a horn or something being played. What is that?
Yeah, it's like
horn?
It's a horn, yeah.
It's okay, horn, okay.
It's like a,
I knew there was an air instrument. There was percussion.
I'm trying to remember,
Doesn't Lisa learn how to play that in The Simpsons, where Pooh comes to live with the Simpsons?
Probably.
And it makes Homer very uncomfortable. I don't know if it's the same horn, but Lisa's very excited being able to play it, and he just goes,
I know. That was the other thing when I was looking up Shiva. I was going to look up the music.
The music, that's right.
And I didn't get a chance to do that.
Because we couldn't quite put our finger on it.
And I wasn't exactly...
God, I've heard this before. I know this.
Sure. I know it's Middle Eastern. I didn't know if it was specifically Turkish. Mm. The sound of the horns and the percussion was kind of reminding me of that area, and it seemed more aligned with Turkish style music than Moroccan style music that also uses similar musical instruments. Yeah. They don't have a horn sound that is played that way.
Yeah.
They have a horn that is used in music, because I've heard it, but sort of the speed and kind of
it's very erratic.
Erratic, yeah. It reminds me of the whirling dervishes.
Okay,
they dance and they spin their hats.
Just, yeah.
And I can't remember if that's Moroccan or Turkish.
I think it's Turkish, actually.
But that's dervishes. Basically what it sounds like. It's like a brass beaten, horn.
Yeah, cause I can't picture it in my mind, but I'm trying to turn sound into words, and it's not working.
I know.
It's that thing that my ear's doing. Yeah. I can't say out loud.
And it was sort of interesting that it was kind of maddening, and he was playing the music for the pigs, and then I couldn't remember if there was a specific, if he, did he play music for the pigs? In,
yeah, well, he was playing.
When it was the same music when
Bill, when he's sitting and hanging out with the pigs and conducting later in the episode.
I know in the episode they use it. Yeah, so it's, it can be Turkish or Persian.
Turkish, Persian, Arabic. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, it's going to go across the...
Yeah.
Let's not get too caught up.
I'm sorry.
That.
Yes, but anyway, let's go.
I know, but I like...
things that we don't know.
when it comes to...
If you at home exactly know what this is.
Information,
the reason why I
want
to be specific
myself
is that I don't like to assume it's another culture. I want to know.
I want to be accurate. I don't want to misspeak.
I don't want to be one of those people.
I wrote my vague Far East comment, and I believe vague that's about as offensive as the Orient at this point.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
And here I am trying to make sure that I am not calling music that isn't Turkish Turkish because I don't want to offend
and
anybody.
And you just throw them out there.
So but that's basically why.
Let's move on to Mason's therapy session.
But my
Honey
question
Badger
was
yes
not whether or not, I know they played it with the pigs in the show.
Yeah,
I was wondering in the book when he is training his pigs if he plays music, because for some reason I can't remember.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was something I was wondering if it correlated to the books or and just because chaos. It's somewhat maddening music.
Yeah.
To try to incite anger and fury because he is feeding them.
Well, yeah. It's at loud. That, it's at that discordant.
Because he imagined that it was Carlo coming and he was going to say they haven't had enough to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's interrupted. The sentence stops, and he sees that it's not Carlo.
Yeah, because Carlo has been dispatched
in a very serious slasher movie moment.
Yeah,
when Will comes up behind Carlo and takes him down.
Yeah,
but Mason in therapy. We get
how much I love Mason.
Two delightful scenes of Mason in therapy.
Yes.
Lying down on the couch.
Well, especially since Hannibal indicates the chair.
Yeah, walks right
Police
past Hannibal.
Walks right and just drama all on the couch.
I'm reminded of camp.
Of camp. Yes. I love every bit of that. He just spells out this really disturbing story about camp.
And that's where we get his
Christopher Walken moment.
Yeah.
It's all okay. I got a walk.
I got a walk.
On the charges.
On the charges.
Yeah. This episode is
your mouth gets rough him when you're afraid, Margot. Sorry.
This episode is really a showcase for Michael Pitt insanity.
Yes.
Really.
Yeah.
This is him being the Joker, you know.
Yes.
This is him being the Heath Ledger Joker.
Yeah.
This is him being Christopher Walken. Mm. There's really no rhyme or reason to the way he's delivering these lines.
No.
It's out of control from a character who performs in day-to-day life.
Yes.
The way he talks to Margot is all a performance because it's designed to be terrifying. The way he talks to Franklin is just like, I mean, he's leaning on him for no reason.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just to be terrifying. So when he comes in to Hannibal's office, completely disregards the protocol for the office, sits down and is in his own little world before Hannibal asks him a question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fantastic. And when he talks about the past therapist, he got him into something unethical. So he couldn't have any sway over him. And Hannibal just says, well, that's not helpful.
Yes, because he asks if the therapy was helpful.
Papa called it altruistic punishment.
Oh, Papa.
And this scene is totally...
Well, your father's dead.
To follow up him talking about that his father could look at a man and see his weaknesses. He's sitting down with Hannibal to look for the weaknesses.
Yes, he's totally trying to seek him out.
When he says the whole thing, I got the doc involved and stuff, he sits up and leans forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's very much I got the doc involved in, you know, something unethical.
Right.
So he didn't have, and it was sort of like, like I could do to
he's
you.
He's baiting.
Right.
He's baiting.
Yeah, he's
Hannibal.
Basically like laying this groundwork of.
And it's from the book Hannibal, where he talks about how he was so excited when Hannibal Lecter gave him a popper because he knew that, well, now he has to give me more because I can blackmail him.
I got him now, not realizing that Hannibal's got him now.
Now, do you think that Hannibal is goaded into revealing, is goaded into the unless biology provides another?
Oh my god, I hate this part. I hate this part. This makes me so angry at Hannibal because you know he is giving it away.
He is.
He's giving it away. He's, and apparently Mason's just too insane, or this particular version of Mason Verger's too insane to be 100% convinced, or maybe not insane enough to be 100% convinced, because he still says later on, she may or may not already be pregnant. But when Hannibal says, unless biology provides, I think he's trying to tell Mason that Margot's pregnant and to take care of it.
I know. Later in the episode, when Hannibal sees what happened to Margot, he is just as furious as Will.
Are you sure?
I am positive.
Because I feel like he didn't want to have to compete with Will's child for Will's attention.
Well, now that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's why it made me angry. I got so angry when I saw it again, because that's the conclusion. That's where my brain went. He was, okay, yeah, he was playing this role like, well, you might have a child soon to replace
me. No, see, I feel like Mason actually gets Hannibal fired up in this scene.
I honestly feel like he isn't, because he makes another comment later on. So Hannibal's talking about how he was a father to his sister when he is talking to Will about having trouble thinking about making a life after taking one. Hannibal says he was a father to his sister.
To Misha,
was his charge. And I feel like, you know, he says Abigail reminds him of Misha. And I think it's very much like how Clarice reminded Hannibal in the books of Misha. And we get this kind of, okay, but having his sister in the book was a weakness. That was what could bring Hannibal down, was that he was looking out for his sister, and he didn't want Will to have that same weakness that he had. That's the way I pictured the whole thing, with him giving away, because you see Mason's face not look happy, not come to a, hey, I should have a baby face. It's a angry, I'm gonna kill Margot face that he makes when he says, unless biology provides, Mason just gets this contorted look, like.
Also, Hannibal has also been really, poking him with a stick. During this whole thing, because after he goes on this really long story, about his, father,
rude.
The camp, and how he gets away with things. And Hannibal's reaction to this was, a boy's illusion is no basis for a man's life. Yes. And it really, you could tell.
Your father's dead.
It completely, it pokes Mason.
It does poke Mason.
In a way that gets him agitated. And then, so then he has to go on this whole thing. My sister loves me. She's destitute and everything.
Right, yeah.
And he keeps going on about, how he's the sole Verger heir. And he's like trying to bring himself back from the pain of that poke. Where basically what Hannibal is saying is, like, you keep talking about how great your dad is, and just because you're the heir, your dad's dead. Can we stop talking about your dad?
Yeah, I'm tired to help you.
This is no basis for a life, to talk about what you to live continually in your life as a boy. Yeah. And I think that really sort of, hurts Mason's pride. And then when he tries to retain his hurt pride and about how he's the sole Verger heir, Hannibal pokes him with a stick again with, and this biology provides an honor. Questioning this whole thing that he's building his ego with, that he is the sole Verger heir in the end, and because because Margot isn't into dudes, she's not going to produce one, and she wouldn't produce one anyway because I have control over her, or she's destitute. And Hannibal basically comes over with his, I'm the heir, big beautiful balloon with a pin, and goes pop.
Yeah.
So that's supposed to give you honor because you've got this biology thing.
Mm-hmm.
You really believe. So I think that pairing and that poking, he may decide to put that out there
yeah.
because he's enjoying poking Mason with this yeah. stick. You know, and then, well, you know, you think you have the upper hand here, but guess what? There's another heir.
There's another option.
There's another yeah. option here. And I don't know, it's, like I said, everything in the show, it's hard to say whether it's truly by his design that yeah. he wants to give up Will's kid. What you're saying, though, makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because he is thinking several steps ahead.
Right. He's thinking towards the future where he wants Will to be his buddy. His pal.
But it also could have been a little bit.
He is very close to Margo.
Yeah.
He is very close to Margo. And I think maybe he was disturbed at how Mason went about doing it. But what did he really think was going to happen? Really. I think Hannibal knows Mason well enough through the therapy sessions with Margo that if he even slightly hinted at the possibility that Margo may become pregnant
that he would be
at
able
any
to find
point,
a way to end the pregnancy.
Then even if it's never even occurred to Margo, Mason is the kind of person who would take that hint and run so far left field with it. And go way past, you know, the reasonable suspicion into, that's it, she has been, she is, let's get rid of it. I think Hannibal knows enough. I think he's a smart enough serial killer to identify with somebody who has that same murderous intent. Mm-hmm. And I think he knows that Mason has that murderous intent for his sister.
So what you're saying is this is where Hannibal crosses the line to be a monster for you. Mm-hmm.
Well,
not all the other people he's killed and
know,
all the other
like
horrible
Margo,
things
okay?
he does.
I like her. I yeah. like her character. And I think she's
you know, not,
seriously
not
screwed over.
Setting up Will Graham to go to jail for his crimes. I mean, we've already seen him stab Jack Crawford in the neck with glass. And we're concerned with Prissy Margot's baby. That's what does it for you.
She's not. I don't know. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Okay. Well, let's talk about being fathers. That Will and yeah. Hannibal have this conversation. Mm-hmm. That fathers can be killers too.
Yes.
And the discussion that it's interesting to be attached, so attached already to something that doesn't even really exist yet.
Mm-hmm.
And. Will has a lot, he calls back to this feeling a lot. I'm not attached, I'm only anticipating attachment. Which again calls up that weird line, the anticipation of being able to feel contempt.
Contempt, right. That almost as if Will, because of the nature of the way he interacts with the world, emotionally, and even to some extent physically, that he doesn't quite fully attain all
right.
the feelings and connections with people that maybe someone who didn't have these sort of roadblocks he has with connections to people. Maybe that's all he can hope for in life, is the anticipation of feeling these feelings.
Interesting. Well, then we get to talk about Abigail a lot.
Yeah. What I also found interesting that led into the discussion to Abigail was the whole idea that, you know, fathers go about hormonal changes.
Oh, yeah.
And that Hannibal, Will likens that to Hannibal's discussion about how, that killing also, that killers,
When you kill, it fundamentally alters,
changes the way
your thinking. So it makes it easier to kill the next time.
Exactly.
So I thought that's what
brings about the fathers can be killers line. You know, and then to have this sort of tender discussion about Abigail and bringing up the sister and which is why I think I find it very interesting with the saying that Hannibal, would bring about the ending Margot's pregnancy when, after their discussion about how much, Will cared about Abigail, you know, that he dreams about her and that, you know, that I'm teaching her to fish and, asking Hannibal, about it, was he ever her father, and that he took care of his sister. And that, Abigail reminded of his sister, and that there was no other way.
Right.
Also, when Will says, you know, I wish that, you know, he says that he tells Will, you know, I'm sorry I took that from you. Yeah. Wish I could give it back.
When, yeah. And he asks if Will would protect this child in a way that you couldn't protect Abigail, which if you're correct, Ophelia, that Hannibal is turning Mason loose on the unborn child. Hannibal is also giving Will an opportunity
to kill Mason.
To protect the unborn child.
Okay, true, if Hannibal but he'd sees, have to kill Mason to do
well, this. Yes, so it takes care of a number of things, which is Hannibal's M.O.,
right.
wrapping up everything.
Yeah.
But that line indicates that Hannibal wants Will to succeed. Just like he turned Will loose on other things in season one,
but
he'd probably die, but if he succeeds...
But he did set out a wild dog on Margot.
Very true.
He set out a wild dog on Margot, and then in this scene, he's talking about, well, hey, Will, you better do something about this wild dog because your child's already being threatened. I mean, honestly, at this point, there's a lot of speculation as to, like, the abuse that Margot has gone through with Mason. And, you know, Will knows that that's who did that to her. So he should already be aware there's a threat to his baby's life.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because at any moment, Margot could be pushed down the stairs or kicked on the stomach or stabbed to see how thick her skin is.
Exactly.
I mean, really, there's not a whole lot of guesswork to be done about whether or not the baby's in danger.
Yeah.
It is.
I wonder if Hannibal did feel like he had to end this to protect his own interests and everything else if it goes under the banner of there was no other way.
Right, because that's why, I mean, Will's like all teary-eyed and he's when they're talking and they're reminiscing about Abigail and he says it with such desperation, why did you kill her?
Yeah.
And that's when Hannibal says there was no other way.
Exactly.
And then he says, I'm sorry that I took that. What would you have done? Or what would you have, like, I forgot what he said. He said, I would have taught her how to fish.
Well, he says, I still dream about Abigail, but I'm teaching her to fish.
And then Hannibal says,
sorry, I took that from you.
Because he can never teach her how to fish.
Yeah, I wish I could give it back.
Yeah.
He wishes, every once in a while, he'll drop a teacup. And isn't satisfied when it doesn't reform.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the thing from Stephen Hawking, isn't it? The teacup breaking is because when the universe is expanding, when it eventually starts contracting, everything will go back into its original state.
Mm. Oh, wow. So he drops the teacup
on purpose. So anything that has been broken will go back together. A broken teacup is used as the standard example in physics. I think it was in
The movie version of...
A Brief History of
Time. Yeah, a movie version of that.
So a teacup broken in the past will reassemble itself.
Yeah.
Ah.
And I like this...
Because he does talk about going back in time.
This philosophical thing from Hannibal. Because it's completely a wistful... Wouldn't it be nice if these things that we've done wrong could be fixed?
And he seems to have this idea that it will happen because someday the couple come together.
Someday.
Or someday when the teacup comes to, you know.
And then he makes the analogy of this baby coming as being a replacement of Abigail.
Yeah. And also that, you know, when it all comes back together, that maybe there could be a place for her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was the place in Clarice's mind that he was digging out. He was digging out a place in Clarice's mind for Misha's memory to live.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, and he could have Misha with him always.
All the time.
And this slow-mo of the cup coming together was absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, it's
this
beautiful.
Shot.
It was going to be the name of our...
It was one of the other alternate names for the podcast was Shattered Teacup. We also got a little bit of that theme from episode one that we don't hear a lot in this show, that distinct theme that, I don't know what it's called because
theme.
He doesn't name
theme
the themes,
music.
But definite music, like an actual character theme rather than this discordant tonality
This season has been all about discordant sounds and lots of percussion. Yeah, definitely more so than season one. Most definitely.
Okay, I'm going to say one phrase to you guys, and I want to hear your thoughts.
Okay. This is going to be a word association game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've got a bloom.
Oh, my God. Creepy.
Oh, that was so creepy.
I've said it before, Margo. I got a bloom.
I honestly feel like...
radiant.
This is here. This is where he's telling Margo, I know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
You don't approach somebody like that without saying it. Like, you know.
I mean, actually, at this point, I thought it was 100% confirmed in his mind. Like, I imagine Mason following her around and catching her pee.
No. Later, he specifically says...
Or filtering the plumbing.
He says to Hannibal, if she's not pregnant now, she will be soon. She's tenacious like that.
Right.
Mason does not know. He's playing the terror and intimidation game.
But see, what I'm saying is, in the future, we find out. But in this scene... I felt like he already knew. He was acting like he already knew. Which is why I feel like this whole, like, Hannibal tips off Mason, then Mason acts like he knows. Then we find out later that he's unsure. See, I did underline, hasn't been, but might be, or is going to be soon. So, I mean, it's, in this, he's acting like she's pregnant, pulling her hair back, talking about a little verger.
That's his intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's also playing up the, I should have a baby.
Yes.
So then it becomes a race between the two verger children to create the heir.
But My own sperm.
That scene ends with, what's your secret?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, that's where I feel like Hannibal tripped the wild dog.
He definitely did. I'm just not certain it was intentional.
Okay. All right. Well, I think my favorite... I don't think Hannibal does anything unintentionally.
Well, yeah, you subscribe to the Super Hannibal theory. I subscribe to the theory that Hannibal Lecter is a very adaptable character, and he can manipulate...
I thought you adapt to the theory that Hannibal could be the devil.
Well, he is.
No.
Okay. I don't believe he has everything planned.
Okay.
I think he's very, very good at adapting to the situation that's thrown at him and twisting it to what he wants.
Okay.
So I don't think he intentionally is setting...
a little bit of a superpower.
Okay, but it's not as much a superpower as the Hannibal knows everything and plans everything.
No, I'm saying he can see... He can, you know, it takes one to know one. He can see the crazy that Mason has.
Well, of course.
And he knows from Marco's therapy what the kind of monster Mason is.
Yes.
So any hint he would give him, any crumb of evidence.
Okay, we can disagree.
All right, fine.
We agree to disagree.
We don't have to keep arguing over it. We can just disagree.
All right. Well, if we want to talk about something fun in this scene.
Composing?
Yes. Yeah. Like a deaf Beethoven.
Composing in my mind.
In my mind. Because it's not enough to compare himself to Stradivarius.
Yes.
We have to, and I love that he has to put it as a deaf Beethoven.
Yeah.
Because we have to also show that not only was he a genius.
He's able to overcome adversity.
Exactly. He was such a genius he could be deaf and compose. Because I'm that damn good. And then he talks about how wonderful his father is.
And I love it. He goes off into his monologuing,
yeah.
And Margot just rolls her eyes, sort of. It's like, oh, dear God. Yeah. Again, yes, Papa, we know.
There was no one better than Papa. Oh, except now for me, of course.
Yes, because meat is a people's business.
Business, yes. There is such a basket full of crazy in everything that he says, and I just love the tremendous psychopathic ego that he exhibits here, and I almost am looking forward to how many other great people he is going to
compare himself to
exactly, how many genius composers. Or maybe he'll move on to scientists after he's done with all the composers.
You better not. You can mock the musicians.
But you can tell that Margot, too, has been through a lot with him and just knows that what he's trying to do is get a rise out of her. And the best thing to do is to stay neutral. Because the minute you show any emotion, you show weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, you really see that in this. That she can't show her hand. She can't show that she's upset or concerned.
Yeah.
How neutral she has to remain the deadpan responses with her during this scene. That's her survival technique.
Yeah. Because that's all she can do with him, is survive him.
Mm-hmm. And that's what she said. I'm just trying to survive this generation.
Exactly.
So Will and Hannibal in therapy. Mm-hmm. Again, we go over a lot of the same themes every time we see these characters in this episode. So again, we're talking about how creative acts have destruction involved. We bring up the Shiva again with the creator and destroyer, and discussing that Abigail was sacrificed.
Yes, you sacrificed Abigail.
But the most interesting and unnerving thing about this scene, is when he says you sacrificed Abigail, he's talking to himself.
Yes.
And then Hannibal sees himself sitting where Will is. Mm-hmm. So it's a really unusual game the creators are playing.
You hear Hannibal's voice being directed at a Hannibal face.
Who
nods.
That's nodding the way Will
would nod. And then you have Will's voice saying something to Hannibal, and you've got Will sitting over there.
Yeah, but not speaking.
And just
but
being silently listening. You don't see the mouths moving of the appropriate character.
Very strange.
One of those moments where I was glad that we were watching these twice.
Yeah.
Because the first time I thought I saw it.
I remember looking over at you when that happened, and you just had this, like, the hell?
Yeah, because I wasn't sure if I saw what I just saw.
Did I just see this?
Yeah. And that, Am I tired? Is that a trick? Yeah. So I'm glad I saw it again, because I was like, yep, I did see what I thought I saw.
I did.
Wow.
Sorry.
Can we talk about God again?
Let's talk about praying.
And praying.
Because Will prayed to see Abigail.
That's where it was. To see Abigail again. Yes. I don't know why I get mixed up. Even though I write this all down, I don't write everything down. So sometimes I'm worried and I get it all mixed up.
But when Will's prayers were not entirely unanswered. He did get to see part of her.
Oh, man.
Which is really such a dick thing to
say.
Right,
that is a dick move.
It is.
That's rude, Hannibal. Rude.
Yes. Yeah. That's not being consoling.
No.
Anyway.
Well, and I like the fact that Hannibal doesn't pray, but not only that, he has not been bothered by any sort of deity.
No. But it's so interesting, though, because he sort of also talks about how God goes beyond measure and
want and malice
and is matchless in his irony. So as much as he dismisses God and prayer.
Well, I think it's that he acknowledges the possibility of God. He just doesn't care.
And that it doesn't affect him because it's beyond
He doesn't
God's,
bother.
Influence.
And that he also talks about how his level of interaction in the world is so minuscule in the face of God's horrendous act.
Yes.
Which we know is like Hannibal's favorite topic, is talking about God's
destruction. Because, come on, God's killing innocent grandmothers in a church.
Dropping facades on them.
What I'm doing is nothing.
I got nothing. God's got nothing.
As he's talking about God being matchless in his irony, we see the shadow of the Shiva Wendigo.
Mm-hmm.
And Will looks up, and I love that both Will and Hannibal look at it.
Right. Well, it almost seems like Will turns to look at it, and Hannibal like turns like, what are you looking at over there? I'm over here.
No, but Hannibal's got a big smile on his face when he does that. Mm. So this is what they have both created. They've created this thing that is both creator and destroyer, and it is going to consume them.
Yes.
Nom. Mason goes back to therapy again.
Yep.
And he starts off miffed. Like, he just looks really angry. Mm-hmm. And then starts talking about the swine fairs stabbing the pigs to check the depth of the fat.
Yes. Oh, because it was good. It was good and fun times.
Yeah. Good and fun time.
Yeah.
You had a strange education. I know. Or something like that. Yeah. And the laugh. Oh my god.
Oh, he kept, I know, I would, I loved every time he laughed.
Yeah.
I really did.
And that's, again, this is a performance that has no business being on this show, and that's what works so well about it. It is totally like the Joker, or like the first time you see Jack Sparrow, you have no idea what you are seeing because you've never seen it before.
Oh yeah, everything from his wild laughter to the way he speaks so lightly and frivolously about the darkest things.
Yeah.
You know, here he is talking about going through a fair, and then Papa would just have a knife
and stab the happy pig.
And stab these pigs. And almost like they deserved it because there were these pampered, coddled yes, with milk, show pigs.
Or, what was it? Milk fat and baby powder?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, did he resent those
pigs?
He
did.
My goodness.
But those were good and funny times. Good times.
Because you got to stick a knife
good
in them.
Times. Got to laugh at Papa when he's stabbing pigs because that's such a fun day out.
Yeah.
What a father and son moment.
Because if he didn't, Papa's likely to stab him right in the back
that's
to see how
true.
Thick
his, how thick his skin is.
And
I mean, we don't know what horrendous things Mason Verger's father did to him.
But we know it's something. So messed up.
We can guess. Yeah. He taught Mason how to stick the knife in Margo.
Exactly. And I found that so disturbing.
Oh, yeah.
That he didn't use any metaphor.
No, very specific.
He actually says all, to stick it in her, and to stick it
just
so far in to test
to
the thickness of her skin.
Yeah. And to see, what was it? Just enough to be effective.
Yeah.
Is what he said. And then Hannibal comes back with, you went in too deep.
Yeah.
And you struck a nerve.
Yeah, exactly. That was interesting to just come right out, and say it.
And this is the recognition here that if Margot has a child, it is a Verger heir.
It's a clever
and will take over, but only if Mason dies. Dead. Which gives Margot that much more incentive to push him down a flight of stairs.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, he's starting to put things together that, okay, if Margot has this baby, she's going to try and kill me again.
So, when Margot runs, there is a bad accident.
Oh, yes,
when
Carlo.
She's hit by Carlo. And there was a really nice tracking shot in that, where it starts in the front of Margot and kind of goes around the car. Mm-hmm. And when you think the accident would occur, it doesn't. It sort of waits until the camera's in a weird position.
Yeah.
And that's when it happens, so it's unnerving and abrupt when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then Margot is in, apparently, the operating room from Dead Ringers.
Yes.
David Cronenberg's movie with Jeremy Irons and the Red Scrubs.
I know, I have it all caps. I wrote, all red scrubs, and the black mask, and the red sheet over her, and she's in the blue hospital, Johnny. Yeah, very unnerving. I just realized I wrote a note up here. I wish I'd written this a couple pages earlier. That when Mason is therapy, I noticed this when he's in therapy, his wardrobe is devoid of color.
Yeah, he's got the white vest.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a lot of color in general. Like his coat, the fur collared coat is white, or at least like a pale gray.
Like a pale gray.
There's another one that the one that he's wearing, I specifically noticed this when he was intimidating Margot. It was like a green, like military, like a dark military green with black straps.
Mm. Hmm.
It like had black, like black leather straps on the shoulder and like a strap underneath like his chest area or something. It was black and looked like it had like little D hooks in it. I don't know. There was something
wow.
I don't know.
I just like he is out of the color palette. That he is so wacky that his choices are not anywhere within everyone else's color palettes.
Yeah.
That he has that oddly Hannibal-esque three-piece suit on, but it is completely devoid of color. It just has the thin window pane. And that the colors that he's wearing do seem to be, they're almost like a conscious choice that he's not anybody else's color palette.
Right. He is his own.
Yeah.
He's separated from the herd of pigs.
Exactly. And then to come in with the dark the scarlet red scrubs.
Yeah.
Is stunning. Just, and being the paleness of his face hovering over Margot. That was horrifying.
Mm-hmm. It really was.
The whole scene.
Yeah.
And she can't move. And
he's going to remove her temptation to have a baby.
Yeah. Poor Margot.
By having the doctor's going to find, win.
Just can't.
God, I want to hurt him so bad.
He's
such a hateable person. You're going to
find something wrong with your lady part.
Or at least that's what the record will show.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He's hovering over her, and he almost seems disembodied.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, oh, it is. It's a horrifying scene. And just says the worst things in the world to her.
They're going to take everything.
Exactly.
Oh, and then you get the tear.
And then takes her tear.
Takes her tear.
And then kisses her on the forehead.
Mm. God, I fucking hate that guy.
And then all the other people.
The doctors
come in.
And then
we get the mask. All in red. Your mask close up with the maid in the
UK. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, as the they're bringing mask. Down the gas mask, you see the focus pulls past the imprint of Made in the USA.
Yes.
And I know it's not an intentional thing and it has nothing to do with the show. I just found it very amusing that the way the focus pulls, it's just suddenly, boom, Made in the USA, and then we'll be
out.
And then it's past the focus.
Yeah. So Will and Hannibal go and visit Margot and silently look at her, look at each other, know what has to be done.
Exactly. No dialogue, just a lot of looks.
And Will goes to Mason,
mm-hmm.
where he takes down Carlo and meets Mason, because mm-hmm. he hasn't met Mason before.
Nope.
And you must be the baby daddy.
How to be, I don't know how he could be ruder.
I know. And just Will just
and then, I'm sorry I didn't,
it's a,
I don't have a cigar to offer you.
Right.
Yes.
And Will's like, fuck.
And then when Mason, wipes his nose and then licks the blood off.
Yeah. But he does it all sloppy. Like, did you notice?
Yeah.
It was all like crazy on the glove. And with his tongue through his fingers.
And then he kind of wiped it all over his face.
Smeared it. He just smeared it.
Freak. He's a freak.
But I really liked the way this was played because Mason thinks he's in charge in this scene. Mm-hmm. I'm going to feed you to my pigs.
Yeah. And doesn't even get to almost finish the plural. Like, I'm going to feed you to my pigs.
And then when Mason turns back around and Will just has the gun at his forehead.
I like he does a fast turnaround like he's going to have the jump on Will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no.
And then it's like, boom, right there. After you've been dangled over the pig pen, you think you've gotten away. Nope.
And the only thing that your sister and I have in common is the same psychiatrist.
This whole bit of dialogue is beautiful.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing of, it's not me, it's not your sister, it's not, and he starts just describing things. It's like, and he ends it with, the only thing we all have in common is the same psychiatrist. And I love when he starts it, because he's got the gun to his forehead, and the angle they've taken on Will in the corner of the shot, and the way it's lit, it's all sort of dark and colorless, and Will's eyes are piercing.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if they've gone in and turned up the whites in his eyes.
Which, again, wouldn't be surprising.
A little bit, you know. And that was one of those moments where I was thinking about post.
Yeah.
Influencing how this scene looks. Because it's almost ominous. It's beautiful. Because his eyes do seem to sort of pop out. Almost like the way the Wendigo's eyes are always sort of in a glow.
And there's no color in this scene.
No, none whatsoever.
Really, really desaturated.
And it is. It's beautiful because it's dark and Will's face is mostly dark, but those eyes are piercing.
And Mason was conducting the Turkish music. We're going to just go with Turkish.
Yes, we're going with Turkish.
Until somebody tells us differently.
Right, we're just going to go with it.
I like the look he gives Will when Will drops the gun. He's like, wait, I'm not going to die?
It's like, well, this is a twist.
What a twist. What a twist.
And then Dr. Lecter's the one you want to be feeding to your pigs. Yeah.
Well, what I found interesting is I didn't write down the exact line of dialogue that he says, but it almost indicates that I'm not here to kill you because it's not my will to kill you.
Oh.
I'm not the one that is the puppet master here.
You think You think that it was Margot's idea to have a baby. You think it was your idea to stop her. You think it was my idea to come here today to kill you. No.
No.
No, no, no. The only thing we have in common. That was what led into
what
that.
What led to it.
Yeah.
What I loved about it is that it indicated that Will's not going to kill him.
No.
Because Will is not the person who is making all the decisions here. And by putting the gun down and going, Dr. Lecter is the one that is making all of these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't see that, he's the one want to. And it just seems like that whole thing of, it seems like he's telling Mason that if Dr. Lecter wanted you to be dead, I'd be here or somebody else would be here to kill you.
Yeah.
But he's not orchestrating this part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm not going to kill you. Because really, the person who is, you know.
Well, and if Mason
really
can take out
here,
Dr. Lecter, that solves a problem.
Exactly.
It does. It does.
It completely does. So it's.
And if Mason can't, that solves another problem.
Another problem.
So it's exactly like Hannibal's win-win situations that he sets up. Either Will's going to die or Will's going to come back and
be
better
triumphant.
Than ever.
Exactly.
Yeah, and
either way, it's
badass
awesome.
Badass killing machine.
Yeah.
But I loved that whole scene and just the whole thing of when he finally tells him that, they have the same psychiatrist and he takes the gun down and it's sort of like, you know, because if he didn't want it to happen, then it's not me that's here to kill you.
Right.
This is your problem. It's not me and it's not Margot. You know, I loved the way that whole ending, was put together. It was fantastic.
On to the next episode.
On to the next episode. We have two more this season.
Woohoo!
Woo-hoo!
We're finally.
I can't wait.
Oh my God!
Finally there.
So excited.
So email us at eattherootcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at eattherootcast or on Tumblr. And once we get to the end of this, we could probably put stuff on Tumblr because, you know, then you can go on there.
Look at it. I know.
Stuff like that Freddy Lowndes as Merida.
Oh,
Merida.
Merida.
Oh, Merida.
That's a Brave.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Exactly. I can actually manage the Tumblr.
Well, no, but in order to go on to Tumblr and use it with Hannibal people, you're going to see spoilers everywhere. That's all they're showing are spoilers. The finale has so many gifts.
In order for me to find things to put on Tumblr, which is what I was going to do.
We need to get to the end.
I gotta get there.
So I'm kind of,
you're in limbo.
Yeah, I'm in limbo. I've been denied Tumblr access. Because I could find spoilers. But once we're done, that's it. Yeah. Gloves are off. I'm unfettered.
You can go wherever
unchained.
You want on the internet.
Yes.
You do not have to, you no longer will have to avert your eyes.
Well, thank you for joining us at the table.
You're listening to a Swing Set podcast at swingset.fm.